Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back to Talk Talk Nation. I'm your host, Joe Weber, and I'm sitting in the garage of Donut alumni Aaron Parker. Aaron, thank you so much for having me. We're in Palmdale right now.
That's right. In your digs.
You said like a half mile away from you where you grew up?
Yeah, half mile right down the road here. Good old Quartz Hill. Dude, it's where the legend of my soul, you know, kind of garnished everything.
It's, came to existence.
Yeah, open desert, dirt jumps, tons of space, lots of roads, a little bit unregulated, kind of just drive off into the desert and do whatever and figure things out, you know?
Fun. For anyone not in the know, we are probably about 20 minutes away from Big Willow Raceway, a historic raceway. Did you go there as a kid?
As a kid, I probably actually didn't even visit a racetrack till I was maybe 16 or 17.
Okay.
And at that time, you know, it wasn't really accessible for kids necessarily. And it was only till I was maybe 25, 26 where I think Redline Time Attack started. And I was like, dude, these are the cars that I like, you know, you know, going around the track. So that was really my first introduction, was probably age 25, 26.
Was that more JDM stuff?
All JDM, dude. It was what I grew up with, you know. I remember in a computer graphics class, one of the seniors was in the class with me and he was my partner. And the whole time we would just look up body kits for like Civics and, you know, Eclipses and RX-7s and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, that was a kind of my intro.
Hell yeah. We have a very famous RX-7. The Wolf, if anyone has seen Aaron on Hyperdrive.
Yep.
It's also made an appearance as a Hot Wheels car. It's been in a couple different other things too, but it's an RX-7 FD.
Yep, third gen. Yeah. FD RX-7. Mazda's pride and joy of the glory days, you know.
And you have an insane four rotor in it, right?
Oh no, I've got a two rotor in it right now.
Two rotor.
But I was building an insane four rotor for it.
Yeah.
Billet. 100% billet,
Jesus.
Semi-peripheral port. It's got titanium studs and inserts.
Oh my God.
All the ports, the semi-PPs are of my design. Too much money and work into the machining of it just because it was like a statement piece for me. It's like everything that I learned and grew to understand with it, you know, plus how I wanted the build to come together all into this block, this four rotor block. It's got like an internal dry sump setup. So there's like no belt. So you never have to worry about a belt falling off and losing oil pressure type of thing. It's all gear driven. And I never got to finish it, although I have everything to complete it.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. It is a nice piece for sure. And it'll run one day, you know. Sure. I just been slowly collecting more parts for it. I still need the upper intake manifold, and I'm going to change it from a turbo application to naturally aspirated, just because I feel like turbo would just be too much, and I just would never take the car out, you know.
Yeah. So this is going to go into the Wolf?
I think it's going to go into a spare FD shell that I actually have in the backyard.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. The Wolf's going to remain as is, two rotor. High strung, maybe, you know, 600 wheel max, 10K RPM and sequential. And that car will just live the rest of its existence as it was. Cause I feel like I just need to give it that, you know, it gave me so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like eventually you're going to move on and it's going to stay the same. And that's fine.
That's it.
So for anyone who doesn't know Aaron, he was on the first and maybe another season of High Low at Donut.
Yeah. I was on the first season was our 350Zs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The second season was don't remind me.
It was season 1.5 was also 350Zs, but then we put the LSs in them.
That's right.
Yeah.
But two
might have been the trucks?
Tacomas?
Yeah, maybe.
That was fun.
Yeah.
But reckless.
Yeah. Well, you take a bunch of like you know, like grip racing dudes and like put them out in the mountains and shit happens.
Right. It was fun though. It was a lot of fun. And then I think I started maybe another one. And then I got a call to go do Twisted Metal.
Yeah.
Which was kind of like one of those opportunities of a lifetime, you know? And
yeah. I forgot to mention Aaron is also a stunt driver, which is probably one of the sickest things you do.
Oh, yeah, it was my dream to get there, right? Like my whole goal after, you know, the competitive drifting thing and I was already getting to a point in my life where I was like, man, I can't hustle this hard for an extended period of time.
Sure.
You know, it was like everything else in my life was kind of taking a back seat. And then I started to see that come to, you know, like I wanted a family. I wanted to live like a sustainable life where I'm like not always constantly just pressed to be hustling 24/7 and only worry about a piece of machinery.
It's a grind.
Yeah, it totally is. So,
did you ever have like nightmares about your car?
Dude, I kid you not. I would wake up like in a jolt. Like I'd wake up like because I was dreaming about how I was going to be doing on qualifying. And if the car reacted this way, I need to make this reaction. And I would jolt up like making this move. And my wife would be like, what's wrong? I'm like, oh, nothing. I was just a dump of the clutch. You know, she's like, what? And now she's like, go back to sleep. And I'm like, all right. And I go back to sleep. But it really was, it's all encompassing, but it needed to be that way to get to a point. Like I wouldn't change anything because that made me not only understand like the machine behind the motive that's like getting me there, right? But also how to drive it. And then once you learn how to drive it, then you just become this thing that like understands all aspects. And I feel like that's helped me do such a good job in this industry because my overall goal was to drive for a living, you know? And this was the most sustainable way I thought that I could get there while still having a family and still keeping automotive fun, because you can get to a point where you're just like, dude, this is so much work. It's like not fun anymore. And
yeah.
I see a lot of my old friends like kind of there now. And, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, put them down or anything. I think it's everyone has their own path. But for me, I just wanted to see the guys who were successful. What did they move on to? And it was driving for a living in some fashion. So I was like,
so you saw your exit as like kind of this glamorous way of getting out of drifting by going into stunt work.
Yeah. Like, making a paycheck, you know, for being behind the wheel, you know, and I didn't know what that would encompass until I saw some like the older heads do it. They'd win a championship and then they'd compete a few more years and then where would they go? And I was like, where'd they go? You know, and they'd be around still, but, you know, I talked to a few of them and they'd be like, oh, well, you know, I'm driving in car commercials now or stunt car driving and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, maybe that'll be what I work towards. And I think...
What was that process like? I mean, you know, starting from basically nothing.
Dude, it was rigorous. It was almost as hard as like getting my pro license in drifting, to be honest, because you can't just like say, hey, put me on a gig, because there's just too much at stake to trust someone.
Yeah,
you know?
There's like, you know, $2 million shoots
that
you
only
get one shot at.
Right, right. I mean, you think about it. Let's say you got 200 people on set and then you've got like a $500,000 camera car with four people operating it. Their wages are being paid, you know, by the hour. All that camera equipment's being rented by the hour. And then they say, hey, we've got this prototype Toyota 4Runner or this new Mustang, you know, 500, whatever. And it's a prototype because they haven't finished this. And it's supposed to, this commercial needs to come out before they're ready.
So the car itself is like priceless.
Yeah. You can't put like a number on it. Right. Yeah. And they need it back on Monday because it's going to go do this demo over here for, you know, Ford's whatever, flagship, what, I don't know. And so, hey, can you slide this thing around the camera car doing 85 on this road that we just closed down? Like, you can't trust someone to go do that. You got to make sure that the person driving is the last thing you need to worry about.
Yeah.
So,
how do you get your foot in the door? Cause you need credibility to get in that position where you can do it. But how do you get the credibility in the first place?
Well, for me, that was the biggest question that I kept asking myself. Right. And, I knew that I was on the right path before I got my license. Cause I was like, you know, I'm going to be driving Formula Drift. And if anything means like car control, it's like drifting. But, the whole thing behind that was if I get my pro license, to me, that meant that I was professional ready, right, to drive these cars. And in that industry, pro driver meant one thing, but being like having something tangible, hey, I have this license that I competed and I got this, you know, that shows something else. Because anyone can go say, oh, you know, I've done this and I've done that. Or, you know, maybe they enter in and they say, you know, look, I hate to become like this old, like, what do you call it? Egotistical person now. Yeah. And I'm not, but I'll just say it because I always think about these things. It's like anyone can say like they're a drifter, right? Or anyone can say they're a comedian. Or anyone can say they're an MMA fighter. But just because Aaron Parker, who has no fight experience other than boxing with my friends back in high school in the garage, goes to a gym and I train one day, does not make me an MMA fighter. Yeah. You know, like it, same thing with a guy who goes and buys a car and goes to the track one time. Yes, you have drifted, but you're not a like pro drifter. You're not a pro driver, you know? So for me, I was just a drifter until I got this pro license. And then once I got this pro license, I was now a pro driver. And so I was like, once I get this tangible thing, they'll consider me like a pro, you know? Yeah. But even then...
Then you have to continue to prove yourself.
Yeah, you have to show that you're not reckless, you know? Because there's more than just one aspect. Yes, car control is one thing. Knowing what's wrong with the car in order to complete something that maybe it can or can't do with the right or wrong setup, you know? And then there's etiquette, like set etiquette. You're not going to go up to like a director and just like start barking, oh, I need this, da, da, da. You know, they have what they have in their mind and they're going to talk to the car coordinator. The car coordinator is going to talk to me and say, hey, this is the gig. This is what we're going to do. You know, so you report to this coordinator and then he talks. There's just like a whole thing about it that needs to be that way to keep things compartmentalized and neat and like accomplishable.
I think we talked to, what's his name? Officer Dan.
Oh, yeah,
I know
him
as Officer Dan, your old co-star
on
Motor Trend. But he also did some stunt work, like a precision driving more, right?
He's done stunt work. I actually worked with him last week down in Mexico.
Whoa,
that's cool. A film called Barracuda.
Yeah.
We spent a few weeks with each other. And
how was that reconnecting?
Awesome. Dude, it's, I mean, we talk to each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's actually stayed at the house a few weeks before that for another event.
He's a solid dude. He's so totally fun to hang.
Yeah, he's great. He actually was one of the reasons I got in to the business is I was working at Dodger Stadium slanging hats. It was like extra innings. I think it was 12:45. It was so late, dude. And it was just, the game was going nowhere.
Yeah.
And Dan texted me, you know, I read the text. It just said, answer your phone, you know? And so, you know, I got a phone call and it was a coordinator. Hey, I'm out here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we got to get this car to slide this intersection. You know, this guy, Dan, says that you could slide it, but you don't have a SAG card. And I was like, no, I don't have a SAG card. And he's like, well, can you do it? And I was like, yeah, I could do it. And he's like, all right, well, I'll see you tomorrow. And I was like, whoa, how am I going to get to the airport?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like at work right now. And he's like, oh, don't worry about any of that. You know?
What?
And I was like, I'm worrying about it, you know, because it's like late, you know? So basically they send a car and then they took care of all the travel, you know, just car showed up at like 3 a.m. at my house. Took me to LAX, flew to Albuquerque.
You slept for like an hour maybe.
Dude, I slept like nothing. But dude, I was traveling with Formula Drift, doing my own events at the time. And then every time I was home, I'd work at Dodger Stadium to make like a commission pay, plus working at Donut, plus wiring, you know? So it's like, that was just the life, you know, you just, any opportunity to open, you take it right then and there. And then,
I do think it's, I just, side note, I do think you wear hats well. So I would imagine that you made a lot of commission money off of selling hats.
It was a good gig. In like 6 months, you'd make anywhere from 25 to 35 grand. So it wasn't a ton, but it didn't matter how many days I had to leave for, you know, because you could hold your position as long as did a good job and they liked you. You're like, you say, hey, I need this next week off. And they'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get to get paid, but you know, it is what
it is. It's good to like have a bookmark in it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but I brought up Dan because when we interviewed him, he was like, you're at the whim of the director when you're doing stunt work and they don't know the limits of the car or they don't know that maybe it's automatic and some of this shit would be like impossible to do in automatic or like, you know, in the physical world, they don't think that way. They have a storyboard and they want to follow their storyboard and they need to get their shot. And it's up to you by any means possible to get that shot. Is that a good way of describing it?
That was the perfect way to describe it because you could think of them as like, they're actually thinking like in what do you even call
visuals?
Yeah, like you could say like a storyboard or sides, you know, yeah. like the sides where there's just a picture of each shot. They actually think that that's what the shot's going to be. So it doesn't matter if the car is missing a wheel, you know, because they were told that the, you know, the car has four wheels. So it's like, honestly, they only think about this shot.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, you know, it's got to do this. And you're like, okay. And then you try your hardest to make it happen. And then there's other restrictions that a lot of the times bite you in the ass as like a stunt performer and you know, driver or as a stunt team in general. And a lot of it comes down to, I think, understanding of the cars, how they're set up, the car choice, the budget, which sometimes is a constriction all by itself, you know, yeah. like maybe they don't have enough money to put this thing together, or they don't understand that they didn't need to put like 10 grand into the motor. All we needed was a $500 differential and they would have got the shot type of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of different multifaceted things that could help you or really screw you
yeah,
up. You
know? It's like a Rubik's cube.
Yeah. 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 But lots of different things that can really affect the outcome of the shot. But
so back to your story.
Yeah.
You get picked up 3 a.m. This is your first gig.
First gig. And dude, funny enough, it was so crazy because I was so pumped to be there.
When does the shoot start? Is it like a 6 a.m.
The next morning.
Kind of thing?
The next morning, I land in Albuquerque and the driver who picked me up at the airport was like, hey, they said you're not going to sleep and you might be hungry. So you want to stop and get some food? And I was like, nah, I'm okay. I'll just go to the hotel. Took me to the hotel. They're like, all right, we'll take you to set in a couple hours, but go check in and, you know, rest or whatever, and we'll pick you up or whatever. So I go to check in, and there's this girl sitting at the counter, and she turns around, and it's Zoe Saldana, you know?
No way.
Yeah, and I was like, had all my, like, just like a backpack with me, and I was like, oh, dang. And I was like, I thought I was going to be working with her, you know? And then, like, she looked at me, and she's like, hey, how's it going? And I was like, hey, how's it going? And then that was it.
Yeah.
And then I checked in. But I remember walking up the stairs because I didn't want to get in the same elevator with her because I was just like, dude, this is like, they always say like, don't talk to the actors or whatever. And yeah. which now.
Oh, so you were looking at it like, I don't want to jeopardize my job.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. I was, yeah. you know, because dude, it'd been, you know, 6-7 years I've been trying to get in with no headway at all.
You weren't even going to let Zoe Saldana.
Not a chance, man. Not a chance. Not a chance. Dude, it was such a hustle. And like, you could say it was like an act of desperation. Or the whole time was just like everything was an act of desperation.
So you're like, no way. I'm not yep. falling in your trap,
nope,
Zoe.
Nope, not a chance yet. So I get to set and then I put my wardrobe on and I was, you know, doubling this one actor. And how it actually came about is they hired Dan to do this gig. And then they found out that the actor was black.
They didn't know he was black before?
Well, dude, you'd be surprised because things are moving a million miles an hour, yeah. right? There's 200, 300 people on set. There's storyboards. That's coming up. You don't know how the last week went. Sometimes things go so smooth and other times it is just nonstop putting fires out. You know, yeah. So I could see the miscommunication. They're like, oh, what about the car? Maybe they're trying to figure out if they could have enough budget to even buy a car that can do this thing.
Yeah.
Right? Plus they have to close down Albuquerque, like, downtown, you know, a full block. So there's police lockups. There's the ADs that have to be at every single street entrance, making sure people don't cross the street or
those are cops.
Hired. Yeah. Or ADs or it would be like production assistants. Oh. Or I'm sorry. Not ADs or like PAs.
PAs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Production assistants. And then the AD department would control all that. And then camera and all the things that go into making a production or getting a shot, you know, in downtown when it's all mobile. And I get my wardrobe on. I walk out and this dude's like, hey, dude, what's up, bro? And I was like, hey, what's going on? And he's like, hey, man, I heard you drive race cars. I was like, oh, yeah, dude, mostly like just like drift cars. And he's like, dude, you want to check out my truck? And I was like, sure. So I walk out to this just like a dirt lot with all these other cars in it. And I have no clue who this guy is.
Yeah. I was going to say, what, like, you let Zoe Saldana take the elevator by herself, but you let this guy with a truck yeah. distract
well,
you?
I mean, he was really like into it. You know, I was like, oh, this guy's a car guy. You know, I was like, pretty cool. And, yeah. you know, and no one was calling for, I mean, now I would never do this. I would just like you know, I'd look at the call sheet, like, all right, I got to be at set this time. Yeah. I had no clue about any of the etiquette part of it.
So you thought this guy might be like the stunt coordinator or something.
I had no clue. Yeah. I was like, maybe I'm working with this guy. He, you know, he
really wants me to check out his truck.
Yeah, I better go. Yeah. So I went out to the parking lot and he's got this brand new Ford Harley Davidson model. I don't know what it was. It was a badass truck, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, you want to go for a ride? I was like, sure. So we get in his truck and all of a sudden he starts doing donuts with all these other cars there.
Oh,
and he's
God.
Just flinging rocks left and right and he's going up and over all of it. And I was like, dude, this is so crazy. And then on the radio, something happens and he's like, hey, bro, you want me to take you up to set? And I was like, sure. And so I was like, oh, dude, the guy ends up being Cowboy Cerrone.
Who's that?
He's an MMA fighter. he's this MMA fighter. Super cool dude.
But like, he's like a PA on set?
No. He was with stunts that night.
Oh.
And loves cars. And then he found out that, you know, the car guy was coming and he ran into me right, I guess, when he was changing. He was like, hey, let's hang out.
That's
so, yeah. So I hung out with him and then he drove me all the way to set. And then that's when I started realizing, I was like, oh, dude, this is probably not the way that I should have came on to set. But he pulls up, boom, drops me off. Everyone's waiting in the safety meeting. So there's like 200-300 people in the middle of this intersection, downtown Albuquerque, 2 a.m. at night. They're all just waiting for me. And I was like, oh man, this is bad, like real bad.
Yeah.
But I walked up there and I was just like super quiet. You know, I walked up and, you know, the coordinator's like, hey, Aaron Parker. And I was like, yep. Say, hey, how much room do you need to get this car like sliding out of that, you know, out of the alley, you know, and join this thing? So they kind of tell me the rundown of this gig. And then I was like, I don't know, maybe 50 yards or so. And then I look over and this other guy that I knew is a pro driver who actually I followed him when I was a kid, Sam Hubinette. He looked at me and he's like, like, good answer, you know. And I was just like, oh sweet, you know, that was cool. And then they're like, you want to go look at it? And I was like, I'd rather look at the car. And I'm like, all right, go take the car down there. So and do whatever you need, you know, go test the car. So I was like, downtown Albuquerque, they just let me roam the streets and just like figure this car out.
That's
the car
sick.
Ended up being Dan's. So it was a 350Z set up by Dan.
No way.
So I knew it worked. And then, I just slid this corner and it was all good.
That's sick.
It was awesome. Dude.
I thought it was going a different way. I thought you were going to get fired.
Oh, so did I when I got there. But, you know, and it totally could have, because I've been on like more than a few sets now where if you show up like that, they're just going to ax you. You know,
wow.
It's like, yeah, because it's just, how are you going to trust a dude knowing what just happened? And when I think back to that first one, they probably didn't know that I was in the car or the truck that was doing the donuts out there.
Yeah. And they're probably like, oh shit, we're in New Mexico and it's 2 a.m. We're not going to find another black guy for 500 miles.
Not a chance, dude. So yeah, Officer Dan, he was like, dude, you know, because he was supposed to do the slide. And then he said, hey, call my buddy. He can do it. You know, and he's black. He'll slide this corner. And so that's how I got my first gig.
That's how I got
my SAG card. Went home after that. And then I didn't work for like 2 or 3 years after that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Up until after COVID, I think I did like a music video for Ava Max or something like that. Mm. And then
So how did you, I mean, skipping ahead a little bit, how did you get into Twisted Metal?
Right there. This is good. This is so awesome. So after I got, did that music video, I did like a couple more music videos and they were always crazy. Like, gnar. I was like, dude, this industry is nuts. You know, it's like so unorganized. But later on I found out it's mostly just music videos because the nature of them, right?
It's actor, just super low budget.
Yeah. Like some actor footage. Links up with a singer songwriter and they want this crazy thing. And then, you know, they have no time, no money to prep, and they want always like these luxurious cars, right?
Yeah.
So it's like kind of a recipe for disaster because there's always a ton of extras running around the streets and doing this and all this crazy stuff. Plus the singer wants to be in the car or whatever, you know? Yeah. So basically, seasons 1 and 2 at, for Hilo were like, basically just like what I call like the glory days, right? So it was the company was so small and so tight knit that you could give us anything and we were going to accomplish it. And then we're going to put out something really cool because just the overall size, like it's like small. I signed up to do this new season of Hilo where the 350Zs get V8 swaps and then we take them drifting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually a season of high-low was between 22 and like 34 days of shooting. They used to just give me the days. Hey, we need you for this. Boom, you're booked. Good to go. Well, it was like 4 or 5 days up until we started shooting, and I still had no clue like how many days I was going to be working.
Yeah.
You know, I was working with him a lot, trying to figure out X, Y, and Z, but it was like kind of the miscommunication was like, I was like, dude, I don't know how many days I'm going to be working. And I kind of work for myself. You know, I'm the only host that's not on payroll. So I have to book these now. Otherwise I have to take other paying work because I'm going to end up not
you
making
certainty
money.
Over
yeah, you have to. And you know, at this point I had, my daughter was already born and I was like becoming an adult, you know, this is it.
You gotta be more responsible.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's what a lot of people don't understand in production.
Oh, not at all.
Is you try to explain like how needy a child is or how you have to just be there to feed them and shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you can't stay till like 9 at night and you can't.
Well, you could if you want to be a bad dad.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you don't want to have a connection with your kids and you want them to hate you and resent you and start doing things the wrong way to get your attention, sure. You know, do it all the time. See how it works out.
Yeah.
But there is a balance to like showing them that like you got to work to make a living. But I mean, I'm sure it's your goal as well as it's mine.
Sure.
And all the other parents that we want to raise kids to do better than us, right?
So yeah, kids are more important than anything.
Yeah.
Any gig.
Yeah. So, yeah, back to the story. So what happened was I only had these like, I think it was 6 days that they ended up booking me on. And it was halfway through those days. And then one of the days they cut and I was sitting there and I had just taken a job with Motor Trend as well to do this new series called Runs Good. And
which was developed by Bart Widenmeyer, also Donut alumni.
Oops. Yep. He called me up and said, hey, dude, I'm doing this new series at Motor Trend. Would you want to be the host? And I said, who are the other hosts? And then he told me the other host. And I was like, I'm in. And then I was like, well, wait, who's shooting it? And they're like, we're not sure, but you know, I was thinking maybe, you know, Eddie Esparza. And I was like, if Eddie does it, I'm in 100%. And then, you know, Eddie called me. He's like, hey, I'm in. And I'm like, well, I'm in.
Yeah.
So I started off doing that show. And I think I was, the next or our first episode was going to be up like in a couple weeks. They called me and told me that they were putting it on hold. We're going to do one episode and then they're going to hold for a certain amount of time or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well,
what cars?
For the Motor Trend show?
No, what season of Hilo? Was this three?
This was with the 350Zs and the V8s.
Yes. Okay. Sorry.
Yep. The drift car set up with the V8s. Okay. So yeah, 350Zs, just no more turbo motors, just, you know, LS. And then I think
one of them was an Escalade LS.
That was our junkyard one. Yeah. That was low car for sure.
Yeah.
And, I went out to Albuquerque that next week. The days for Donut weren't until the following week. And I met this dude on an airplane and I started talking to him because I was holding actually this helmet and that helmet bag right there. He's like, hey, dude, you're holding a helmet. And I was like, you're holding a helmet. And he's like, where are you going? And I was like, same place as you, you know? And he's like, what are you working on? And I was like, oh, dude, I just started this Motor Trend show. We basically just finish these project cars and then we take them out and do this thing that the original owners wanted to do. And then we called an episode and he's like, oh, well, that's pretty sweet. Well, you know, do you drive them at the end? I was like, yeah, dude, we go to the track. It depends on what the end goal was. But for this one, it's going to be pretty sweet, dude. We're going to take it to the track and do a time attack thing. He's like, oh, you're a driver. I was like, yeah, I'm a driver. And then we started sharing which helmet and where we got them and all that stuff. And then as I'm talking to him, I'm like, dude, this guy, you know, he sounds familiar, but I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And dude, 2.5 hours later, I found out that he actually knows me because of Donut.
No way. Right?
Yeah. His son watched the first season of Hilo.
Oh, shit.
I actually already followed him because he had all these Pikes Peak records for motorcycles and cars.
Yeah.
And his name is Greg Tracy. And he was like, dude, let me get your contact info. I could totally use you. You know, he asked me if I had my SAG card. I was like, yeah, I have my SAG card. And he's like, oh, that's good to know. And then that night in the hotel, I was like, man, I should have like bugged that guy, you know? But I was like, nah, dude, you know, he was just a cool dude. Like just hit it off with him right away. Everything was, you know, same type of person. And
well, you never know on a plane with if it's like a two and a half hour flight or longer.
Right.
You don't want to get stuck in a conversation where it gets awkward or weird.
No.
And if you press, you have to like, it's literally like a poker game where you're like, all right, when do I like drop this card? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we're going to land in 20 minutes. I'll ask for their name now. Like, you have to kind of plan it out or else it's going to like, you know.
Yeah, it'll be awkward and stuff. Yeah. And so at the end, though, that's when he was like, hey, let me get your contact info.
That's cool.
So he got mine. But then I was in the hotel room and I was thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, he texts me. And he was like, hey, dude, it was really good to meet you. I'm going to keep you in mind for things in the future. And I was like, sweet. You know, maybe this is how you make those connections to get into this world, right? 3 months later, I got a phone call from a guy who said that this guy, Greg Tracy, gave him my phone number.
Oh, and so it wasn't Greg Tracy who contacted you. It was someone else.
It was someone else, but Greg Tracy gave my number to this guy.
Yeah.
But we were shooting Hilo, and I'd only had those 3 days left on that I was contracted with to finish up until they said, hey, we'll give you two more days or whatever, you know? But I was like used to the 30-something days or 22 days of shooting, and I only got like six. So there's 3 days left on this, and I got this phone call. Hey, man, we're shooting this new TV show called Twisted Metal. The lead actor is Anthony Mackie. And we'd like you to come drive for him, like be a stunt double as a driver.
That's so sick.
And I was like, let's do it. Because 100%. I was like, I'm in, you know, cause I was, again, I was looking for that longevity. I was looking for the way in, and this dude who I just met on the airplane gave my number to another guy who was looking for someone like me, and then boom, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I told the production at the time or the people at Donut, I was like, hey, I got to go do this. Like, you know, I've only got 3 days left on the, on my contracted thing. And one of them just got cut. So like, really, I got to take the long work. And then I didn't hear anything back, and that was it.
Nothing,
dude.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, I told Nolan, I talked to Nolan, and he was like, dude, you got to go, you know?
Yeah.
So he was like, I'll be bummed, but you know, we'll work on other things. So I'm like, all right, cool. So went to go do that. And then, rest was history. I made friends with Anthony on the shoot. Dude, he's such a like a blue collar guy, just like super down to earth. Couldn't speak any more highly for him as a person. The whole season went great. I learned a ton, as well as from the stunt team that was there, the camera car driver. Clay Cullen was the coordinator, who is a good buddy of mine now. He's a pro or ex-pro jet skier, really good on a dirt bike. And good driver.
Pro jet skier?
Yeah, yeah. Clay Cullen. Yeah.
Like stand-ups. Racing or?
Yeah, stand-up. The
flipping
racing.
Shit.
Yeah. Well, not the flipping, but just like buoys, like, you know, going for time. And it's pretty gnarly, man. And you would be surprised. Like, you think you're proficient on one of those things, and then you get behind him and you're like, man, this is next level.
That's crazy. You know? Checking Allstate first could save you hundreds on car insurance. Not checking that you have everything first before getting off the plane? Oof. You ever try to turn around and get back on the plane? That's not happening. Yeah, checking first is an excellent idea. So check Allstate first for an auto quote. It could save you hundreds. You're in good hands with Allstate. Potential savings vary, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate North American Insurance Company and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
If you fall behind those stand-up ones and it like blasts you, you're...
Or if you fall in front of one and one runs you over, you know, it's a lot of weight that's going to... Yeah. To mow your ass over and not going to be
such
good.
A crazy, I mean, even crazier than a stunt driver is being a professional jet ski racer.
Yeah. 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 But while I was there, I actually stayed with him on at his residence. Like he got you get like a location allowance. So he had this place on the river, or lake, whatever Lake Pontchartrain, I think it was. And, I could be murdering that. So don't count my words for it, but, whatever lake is, the
Where
Gulf
of
shoot? Louisiana.
Oh, it is. I think
Lake
it's
Pontchartrain.
I think that's close at least.
Yeah, there's alligators and everything, but we basically, every day we weren't shooting, we just rode jet skis. So I ended up buying a jet ski while I was there.
No way.
And just,
a stand-up one?
Yeah, it's actually in the back. I'll show it to you after this. It's a 650. It's a 2012 Superjet.
Yeah.
Two-stroke. Love the two-strokes. Same as rotary.
Oh, man, that sounds fun.
Oh, so much fun.
Can I confide in you? I've never driven a jet ski before.
What about a sit-down one?
Never, nothing.
Oh, dude, you got to get out there.
Do you like
the water?
I do like water. I never grew up in a situation where it was like available to me.
Oh, I hear that, man. Yeah, I got kind of spoiled. My mom had a boat, and then my cousins, they all had them.
Where do you go around here? This is like desert.
Well, we used to go to, there's a lake called Buena Vista, which is kind of towards Bakersfield. You know, you go to like Button Willow and you see it off to the left.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of trees.
Pyramid Lake?
Pyramid is out here as well as Castaic. But we would go to Parker, Arizona, to the river or Lake Havasu or anywhere that along, I guess, the Colorado River right there.
Yeah.
And you can ride them. But
that's fun.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Another donut alumni worked on Twisted Metal, Iffy.
Wait a second.
Do you remember Iffy?
I do remember him.
Yeah, he was a writer on it.
No way.
So you probably wouldn't have like crossed paths on the shoot.
Right, right.
But he was a writer.
A few of my buddies are actually writers.
Yeah.
He didn't do season two, though.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, yeah, because there's a guy named Grant Derconian and Sean. I forgot what Sean's last name was. But those two guys actually remained in contact with them, both writers for season two. But yeah, season two happened, and as Hollywood goes, they basically fired everyone, moved it up to Toronto to get this 30% tax incentive, and then, you know, I was bummed because I wasn't going to be on season two. Yeah. And then
they found a different, like a Canadian Aaron Parker?
No, Anthony Mackie, he texted me like this the day after, was like, "Hey, dude, I heard they fired everyone. But I'd like you to still come drive for me on season two. So I'd like to bring you up."
He fought for you.
Dude, he fought for me and he brought me up to go do season two. And then I did season two.
That's sick, man.
Yeah. And then on June 3rd, I leave to do season three.
So, oh, man.
Yeah. I've done a lot of productions with him now. Anything that he drives on, basically, he'll give me a call and give me some dates. And then you just get on a plane and you end up being there and you shoot for him. So
is there anything you wouldn't do for Anthony Mackie? Like if he was like, "I'm in this new Mission Impossible spinoff and I'm doing this wingsuit jump."
Oh yeah. Only driving stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only do the driving stuff. Okay. So like if it flips, if it catches on fire, if it rolls, if it goes in the air, if it slides or hits something, I'll do it. You know, like, you know, no problem there. Once it comes to like other stunts, he actually has a fighting double who does like all of his Captain America stuff. His name is David Warren.
Who's used to impacts and stuff like that.
Yeah, he does everything else. So he's really good at all that stuff. His background is obviously different than mine. He's more the flippy, jumpy, all the acrobatic stuff.
Guy who needs knees when he's 45.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm just, I'm still like an athlete, but I didn't grow up doing spins and kicks. I could do backflips.
Oh, sick. You could still do a backflip?
Nah, I'd probably bust my ass out or break something.
Dude, I tried to do a kickflip in Donut's kitchen the other day. And that was like, I've been skateboarding for more than 30 years and I could do better kickflips than I could do ollies forever. And I could not even like flip. It was like embarrassing. Man. And I haven't skated in like 2 years. I would have a couple more years before all my skills. But anyways, so you mentioned that you're an athlete and we talked about skating a little bit before.
Yes.
But you didn't skate, you did BMX, right?
I used to be able to do kickflips.
Oh,
and
sick.
I had ollie. Yeah, I used to work at a pharmacy ride shop, but I was all into BMX. You know, dirt jumps and street riding, I was like really into. My senior project was actually building a BMX bike from the ground up.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, which... Dude, I put so much passion into it, you know? It's like the same as like my race car, right? Like building this thing. And then I'll never forget, like this girl, she redid her dad's office. And obviously, she just like printed out this thing that looked like all nice, you know? but I had like every picture of how I put it together. And I went to the bike shop and they taught me how to lace the wheels. So then I documented that. And then I wrote down like, you know, what it took to learn and how I messed this up. So I had to buy more of these, you know, and that was a good learning process. Then the bike shop owner, you know, helped me finish them like real nice.
Wait, this is a high school project?
Yeah. It was called a senior project. You know, you had to like do this one big thing at the end of the year. And mine was building a BMX bike from the ground up.
Yeah.
And I got a 3 out of 5.
What?
And I was like, I'd never had something hurt so bad. I really, there's probably nothing up until that point that I was most passionate about than this. And I really tried. You know, the girl got like a 4.5. And I was like, dude, it's a piece of paper that's like a computer rendering, you know, of like this shop space that she probably didn't even redo. It was just her dad's like office. You know?
Why? Did the teachers not like you or something?
I just think it was disconnect. You know, the probably... Teachers probably at the time were like, "Oh, that's not a future, you know, like he should have.
Oh, it had to do with like what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
What?
I know. I mean, I wouldn't change a damn thing now, you know, God forbid.
She probably works at one of those like furniture rental places.
I know. So. Well, you know, I hope she's actually doing well because I don't wish bad on anyone. I don't wish bad on anyone. But,
like I can read between the lines.
But I'll take a 2 any day or 3 or whatever the hell I got.
Yeah.
It was low if it meant that I get to live this life again and be in the same position. So
could you have failed if you?
Yeah, I don't think I didn't know anyone who failed. I knew people who didn't show up, but I just didn't really see them. Again, I think they got makeups or something like that, you know.
Dude, that sucks. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay, man. Again, I landed here and I feel pretty good about it now.
Well, that kind of transitions well into my next question, which is you put so much effort into being meticulous about this bike.
Yeah.
And I know you kind of as like this wiring guru. And you have your own wiring company, Wolf Wiring?
Wolf Motorsports
Wiring. Wolf Motorsports.
Yes.
Okay. From, you know, I was not really a part of Hilo that much. I would stop by the set once in a while, but the overall sentiment was like that you were very meticulous about everything you do.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword, to be honest.
Oh, I mean, when you're on a like production timeline, it can hinder you a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you're actually doing something that you care about and you want to run well, I wouldn't want anyone else to work on my car other than your type of, meticulous person.
Yeah, that carries over into everything, right? Like, even, like, this home, you know, you want work done on it. Well, no one's going to do a better job than you. But if you don't have any skills to do it, how are you going to get it done the way that you want it to get done?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I started the Wolf Motorsports Wire because I needed more money to drift and provide, like, money just to fucking live straight up. So I started wiring cars earlier on and doing my own work because I couldn't afford to pay someone to do it on my own car. And that led to down the line, you know, I became good buddies with like Matt Field, because he shared a tent with Odie or no, at the time it was Mad Mike and Odie under Nitto. And then that turned into me working for Odie because Mike stopped competing in FDUSA. So Odie offered me a job. I went to his team and then Odie and Matt were on Falcon. And that's when Lauren and Jesse shot Frenemies.
Oh shit.
And then they needed someone to speak behind the camera. And it was always me right there. They'd say, "Hey Aaron, what just happened?" I'm like, "Oh dude, we got this 5-minute call and no one's supposed to touch the car before this and da 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 da." And you know, if anyone touches it, they were disqualified. The 5 minutes is up and then we're out. And then that turned into like a series, Frenemies.
Yeah.
Right. And then down the line, that ended up leading to Jesse giving me a call and saying, "Hey, we need another host for Hilo. Do you want to do it?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And that's kind of like my entry into,
that's awesome,
into Donut.
So yep. The Jesse he's referring to is Jesse Wood, who used to be
right
our creative director. I don't know if that was his actual title. He was like chief creative officer when he left, but
I think, yeah.
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 One of the most instrumental dudes at Donut and now works with James at Speed. But yeah, it's crazy how small the world is when sure you start is. Like recalling all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The wiring part, that was always going in the background. So, You know, Wolf Motorsports Wire ended up meeting Matt Field through Odie. And then he was like, "Dude, you should come up to Drift Cave in Northern California and wire cars for us. We got like 2 or 3 projects at a time. You come up, stay at my house, wire the cars for however long, work out of the shop, and then go home when you're done." So I did that for 6-7 months, and I cranked out 3 or 4 projects or something like that. Maybe a few more, I don't know. And then became real good friends with him. And then he's like, "Dude, you should just make your company like legit." And I was like, "I should." And that's when I, you know, it became like an LLC. So now I've got an employee. We do Baja, like 1,000 trucks. We've done like builds, like really expensive builds before. Anything that goes, basically, we'll do it all motorsports grade, Tefcel wire, mil-spec, autosport connectors, you name it.
I don't know any of those, so I'm not going to name any.
It's okay. I can show them to you if you want.
I want to talk about Hyperdrive.
Dude, Hyperdrive was a shit show.
Yeah. it didn't look that put together on screen, but I knew behind the scenes you're at an old abandoned factory with all this janky kind of engineering. The seesaw thing, I was like, there's no way that's like OSHA certified.
No, that was real. That was real. I actually knew the coordinator. I still talk to him. He's a good buddy of mine now. And he's introduced me to other stunt coordinators. So when I first got on that show, he's like, what's your goal? He's like, my goal is to be like a stunt driver. Like that's overall to drive for a living. And he's like, okay. So after we did the whole show and then I got, what is it called when you just flunk out or exterminated? What happens when you get off a TV show? You lose or something or disqualified?
Knocked out.
Yeah. After I got knocked out, he's like, hey dude, you want to stay and help me test this stuff? You know, and I was like, sweet, yeah, sure. And so I tested all the stuff, like the big, I did that once in my car, but then after they changed the ratio so it'd go much faster.
Oh God.
You know, but the thing was, is like everyone's cars were different. So I don't know if you saw it, but when the Japanese JZX got stuck and it almost got pinched or whatever, the saw came down, basically like smashed it and it's the opposite way. It came up and he jumped off, you know, and he barely got it. You know, it would have been really bad had it been like a second later. But yeah, I got to do that and, you know, test the cars. And
where'd you guys shoot?
Upstate New York. I would have Rochester.
I would have never thought Rochester. Yeah. It does kind of have like, it wasn't an old abandoned.
It was the old Kodak factory.
Whoa.
Which there's like rumors of, there being a nuclear reactor down there, which I actually believe. I don't care if people think I have the tinfoil hat on, but I'm not talking crap or anything, but there was a very high number of people with like physical deformities in that city that we were staying at. Whoa. And I was like, man, you know, like if there was and the water was tainted or something, that kind of explained like, you know, what it could
be. That's crazy.
To back my theory, there's this one like I don't know what you'd call obstacle where you had to drive your car through water and everyone's scared because they thought they was going to hydrolock your motor. I wasn't because my car's like two stroke.
Didn't it happen to that South African girl?
Yeah. But I was like, man, you know how hard it is to actually hydrolock like something, you know? But again, my motor's two stroke, so it could actually ingest water and keep running. Like it's not going to damage anything.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. You could like, actually one of the methods to clean it is you hook up 2 gallons of water, one on each port, and then you put it into the intake and then you just step on the gas and it steam cleans the motor.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt it at all. I drove through this water that they filled up from the groundwater. And then I was like under my car later. And, the next morning I woke up and I had like irritations on my skin from the water. Yeah. Well, at the point I didn't know it was the water that did it, but then I was like, wait a second. Cause I got under my car again. I noticed that my transmission, like it's like billet aluminum, right? But it was all oxidized from like the water hitting it. So it wasn't like a mirror finish anymore. I was like, dude, this water like jacked up my sweet ass transmission, you know?
That's weird.
And then I put it together where it was irritating my skin. And I was like, dude, I wonder if I just got like some crazy, I don't know.
Yeah. But what is the, I don't know the theory that there's like a nuclear reactor. Is it just, why would they have that there?
Well, it was the old Kodak film plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was just, if you like Google it or look it up, there's all these like hearsay about there being a nuclear reactor down there that they ended up covering up. Like it like went bad or something. I don't know.
Weird.
The Kodak plant.
I've never heard about this.
Yeah. I mean, the place is massive. It's huge. And it's like this giant industrial factory that is old as shit, and you could kind of put it together and like, I could see that being there.
Yeah.
Not that I 100% believe it, but all right, I believe it.
Yep. So what was, you said that it was like a shit show filming that? Why was it so bad?
Because look, you got expensive cars. You've got, I don't know, was it 30 contestants or something like that?
There's a lot.
Ton of contestants all coming to Rochester, New York. All of them had their builds like funded in a way to be competitive, right? So they're giving you money to outfit your car with XYZ. My car was already done. Basically, imagine me saying, hey, dude, or you being like a PA on set and be like, hey, I need to fill your car up with fuel. But you don't know anything about cars, right? So like one day I like showed up and there's this PA holding this gallon of like this fuel bucket and he's trying to fill up my car with the wrong fuel.
Oh God.
You know, basically it was, you know, having a bunch of people who didn't know about cars, try to manage, you know, 30 contestants who are all into cars, trying to accomplish this, you know, American Ninja Warrior with vehicles was just a recipe for disaster. It needed way more like rehearsal and all that stuff to get what they got out of it. I think it was pretty ambitious, and luckily it worked out. But for the contestants, I'm pretty sure that there's not many who would say they would do a second season. You know?
Did you stop that PA from filling your gas?
Yeah, it became this huge argument because they don't know anything about it. So they were like, you know, they were under the impression that these cars were theirs.
Yeah.
And they're taking care of them, you know, when they're not. And so I yell, I was like, hey, don't put that in my car. You're going to ruin it. Da, da, da. And then it became a thing where the person, like one of the producers gave me my own fuel drum so that I could fuel it. Cause I was like, no one's touching this car except for me.
Yeah.
You know, like if it, something happens, I have to pay for it type of thing. I've been on like a lot of productions now. And when something goes really smooth, you start to really value it, you know, versus some of them that just, you know, everyone's on a different page. No one knows what's going on. The communication's bad. The timelines are not realistic, and ambitions are too high, you know. So
did you meet some cool people through it
though? Oh yeah, dude, my current dentist is actually who I met on that show. His name is Brett.
Was he a driver?
He drove.
Was it the muscle car guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember.
Old cowboy guy.
Yeah.
In Kentucky. Yeah. I actually ran into him again on another car related thing in Saudi Arabia.
No way.
Weirdly enough, it was the first, they call it like fires. I don't know what it was. It's a Saudi Arabian automotive. I don't know. It was right before COVID. And then COVID happened. They didn't do it the second year, but it was so awesome.
Damn.
It was sick.
I had followed that like she was probably 14 or something at the time, the South African girl.
Stacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's, her online presence is awesome.
Yeah.
Like she drives the old E30.
And does
all the tricks, like hanging out the door and
stuff.
Right. That South African drift culture.
Spinners.
Is insane.
Spinning or whatever.
Yeah. And they're just like, it's more like circus stuff than actual like precision. There is precision involved in it, but it's like hanging out the door, you know, like doing crazy shit while it's just pinning.
Just lay it in 100% and then, you know, do like the, that's I guess spinning, right?
Yeah
We got to go out there. I went with Mad Mike when we did Conquer the Cape, when he drove his the three rotor RX-8 up and around I forgot what they call it, but it's basically in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Franschhoek Pass is what Yeah, it's a really cool video. But we got to see and spend time with them out there doing that. They actually offered us to get in the cars too, but we were like, man, we don't want to mess up this shoot. And we're, you know, on this production timeline, we had to go. But really cool to meet them. And we actually saw her drive before I even was on Hyperdrive.
No way.
Yep. I saw her out there doing it. Before I realized it was her, like years later. And then when I realized it was her, I was like, hey dude, I saw you. And she was like, what? Yeah, I was there that night. I was like, yeah, I got video of you.
That's so sick.
Pretty cool.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we're running out of time, Aaron. Thank you so much for giving us your afternoon to do this. But I wanted to just mention how cool it was that you started, you know, we started kind of in the same place. Like you had a different background, obviously, but like Donut was kind of our in. And then we went in different directions, but now you're just doing like the coolest, biggest shit. And I'm so happy for you because you're such a nice dude. And I always just like, you're one of those people that I always come back to as like someone that was super professional, you know, even when we were like ragtag kind of like startup energy, you always brought all of your energy into everything you did.
Oh, thanks,
and
man.
I think that's why that like you've succeeded as you've done is because a lot of people see what I do as it's just like a professional, nice dude, great to work with, and you get results. And
thanks,
I think,
man, I appreciate that.
Dude. You continue to succeed in, you know, the big film world. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy you're doing Twisted Metal season 3.
That's right.
So if you want to plug anything, please.
Dude, I don't even know what to plug. I just, what you said kind of like really rounds it off for me. Because I think that I'm glad I got into cars, like as a career later on, because I really can value it. You know, I worked some really bad jobs, you know, yeah, and made some really shitty wages trying to get there. And because of that, it made me more wholesome and value what I have now, you know, being able to do what I love for a living, be around cars, drive for a living, be on these sets, you know, flip cars and get blown up and, you know, see it later on the big screen or whatever. And
yeah,
to me, it still feels the same though. You know, it's like no different than me sitting on the grid for competition for like a drift car. You know, I still get like that, like exciting high off of it, you know. Yeah, it is different completely. And you know, if I did have one regret, it was never competing in like Pro One. That was like something that I still truly feel like today I could have done and like done well. But you know, this, oh, there's always time. But now I'm like, I have these two little kids and my wife, and I value so much what they're going to become that every free moment now goes into that.
That's awesome.
You know, so it's like, yeah, I'm okay with the life that I got to live. Was so exciting, dude. It's, yeah, I mean, I pinch myself a million times over the places I've been all around the planet, people I've got to hang out with, and then icing on the cake, getting to do what you love for a living and get paid for it. So it's like, how much more could I really want other than to help build them into a person or people that can value what they get to do and hopefully make a living doing it.
That's very well said. I really, that resonates with me, just having kids. Like,
yeah,
I want to provide the best life for my kids.
Yeah,
and I want to foster whatever they're into.
Right.
Whether it's cars or whatever, know, if right, they want to go in a different direction.
Yep.
So thank you, Aaron.
Dude, thank you so much.
It's really good to see you.
We'll have to do it again, man. I've got so much left on the table.
I know. I want to talk about like your rotary background too. Like, man. So let us know in the comments if you guys want Aaron back on the show. We have at least a couple more hours of conversation left.
Just wanted to give a couple shout outs. One is this actual hat. This is releasing tomorrow. It's my signature hat from Melon Brand. You can now purchase this on their website. It's got all the livery from my pride and joy, the work of my life, which was the wolf. It's basically designed because of it.
Yeah.
It just says a high effort times persistence equals infinity red line. You can figure that out by yourself. Rokes helmets, they've been a pretty big safety sponsor, you know, just from keeping my head safe.
Keeping
my melon safe. And then lastly, if you guys were ever into skateboarding, I don't know if you guys know Pharmacy Ride Shop, they opened up another brand called Slow Ride Garage. And basically, I've been wearing their stuff for about 2 years now. And it's just lifestyle garage wear for people who like cars. So
sick.
That's about it.
Good plugs. Be sure to like and subscribe. Follow Aaron at, what's your handle?
AAParka.300. I will say I'm not as active. I'm pretty active on my stories. If you like coffee and, you know, watching traveling things, I'm always on that.
Hell yeah. So follow Aaron for his coffee insights. Follow me at Joe G. Weber and follow Donut Podcasts. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.